Packet Pushers.
Hello and welcome to the Network Automation Nerds podcast, where we explore the latest in network automation from a practitioner's perspective. I'm your host, Eric Cho, a network engineer who loves everything about network automation. I'm here with my co-host, the one and the only Ethan Banks. In today's sponsor episode, we get into the unique challenges of network automation in large healthcare systems. We discuss key considerations of the why, the how, and sometimes the nonlinear path we take in the journey. I'm always stoked to talk about network automation use cases, especially for verticals such as the healthcare system that many of us do not have significant exposures to. I know it's going to be a great conversation. Today's sponsor is iTential. Our guest today is Wuzir Khan, Manager of Network Services at Rush University Medical Center. Welcome to the show, Wuzir. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself and Rush University Medical Center?
Hey, good afternoon. I appreciate the invite. It's a pleasure chatting with you guys. So a little bit about myself. I come from a pretty extensive technical background. So I'd been doing engineering, architecture, and kind of consulting for a good bit of my career. And at some point, I think I made the shift to go, hey, I think I could offer my expertise in a more leadership way. And I feel like I could make a bigger impact to overall shape kind of what we do today. That has led me getting a leadership role at Rush University Healthcare System. And we are located in downtown Chicago. Regionally, we're three hospitals with, I want to say, like 30 to 40 ambulatory or WAN or remote sites. They kind of all funnel everything back into the system at large. This is my first foray in healthcare. Prior to that, I was in education as well. It's exciting and really interesting to be part of something from behind the curtains, really. Healthcare is so unique, right?
Yeah.
We see it, we consume it in some capacity one way or another, but really to see the complexities of IT challenges behind the scenes, it's been an eye-opener, really.
Like you said, most of us consume it one way or the other, but until we actually get into it deeply, we don't realize the complexity or the scale or the scalability of it. And you mentioned this is your first time getting into the healthcare system. What was the most surprising thing? Like, what's the one thing that surprised you the most when you did get into the environment?
Actually, I think this kind of has to go hand in hand with my journey. I had just started at Rush. We were expecting our first kid, and our first kid, he was born premature, super early. Well, not super early. It was 34 weeks, but just the trepidations of being a first-time parent and having a preemie baby and just trying to figure out how do you stay connected? What are all the things that, you know, are happening and how do you keep in tune with that? So as a parent, I was living it. And as a technologist, to what you called out earlier, I was helping support this. So from a healthcare perspective, it was impressive to see we've got hundreds of sensors, so many different systems, different people watching it. There's not just a nurse, there's a team of nurses, there's a care team really who were kind of watching in behind the scenes of the delivery of care. And then from a technology perspective, it's impressive because, again, you're thinking it's a sensor and somebody watching it on a screen, but there's some intelligence behind it. It ties into other systems and how that gets recorded and charted and every little thing is being monitored. That was fascinating. And then just to see the tools and the backend infrastructure supporting all of this is impressive in itself. The big challenge in healthcare is you've got a gamut of technology, right? You've got stuff ranging from the 80s that hasn't really changed much. And we're still talking about, you know, like old serial connections, technologies that you barely read about in like study material, like BACnet. What's BACnet, right? You end up supporting some of these systems. So I think it was really an eye-opener for me to run into some of this tech and just the gravity of it all. I thought it was phenomenal. And again, going through that experience, that challenge, wanting to take care of an individual on the other side, being that individual on the other side is, I would say, a little rewarding. It's cliche that we all impact patient care in some degree, but I truly feel that technology does empower and provide our teams that deliver care and all of that. We're a part of that. We contribute to that.
I love that mission, right? Like, I think just besides the fact that it's a job, it's something that you get paid for, but at the same time, it's a mission that you drive toward. You already mentioned a lot of the importance of networking, right? Because you have all these sensors that you have all these sites and hospitals that are big hubs. So I imagine automation is a big part of that networking practice, right? But we all have to start somewhere. So when you got there, how did this network automation journey start, I guess, for you and for Rush Medical?
For me, funny enough, my automation journey started with tinkering with IFTTT because I was terrible at communicating back to my wife when I'm leaving work and letting her know that, you know, she's like, hey, text me. I would have had you pick something up from the store.
Tell us what IFTTT stands for. Because I mean, I know I'm a geek. Ethan's a geek. Yeah. But, you know, maybe some people are not familiar with that. So give us an overview.
Yeah. So in the early days, I'm sure there's other applications now, but a couple years back, I stumbled upon it by chance. And IFTTT is really just a platform that connects to other systems, whether it's home automation, whether it's your phone, whether it's GPS for geofencing, a whole gambit of things. It just really is a connector of sorts.
Right. If this, then that, right? IFTTT.
Yeah. And the simplicity of it is really around, you don't have to be a coder. You don't have to be a programmer. You don't have to really understand how your phone works or how geofencing works. It literally is recipes. I think that's what they actually call them. Call them recipes. You take certain things and you drag them into a box. If this happens, do this. And that's your recipe for your automation bit. And shamelessly, one of my recipes, due to me forgetting things off, and in particular texting my wife, was to write a recipe to send out a text message as soon as I leave work. And that was based around some geofencing. So that was my journey for automation. And honestly, like even through early on in my career, I had run into some Perl scripts. I think when I was working, there was a lot of Perl and not so much Python, but it's amazing how much of a comeback Python's making.
Well, yeah, Perl in the day had all the libraries you'd want for all that kind of stuff. And there were plenty of examples out there. And, you know, Python has really replaced all of that. I mean, is anybody doing much automation in Perl these days? I suppose you could, but everyone's using Python.
Yeah, and the scary part about those, or scripts in general, right? It really is, if you write your script, you know how you wrote it. And most of these are just organic homebrew scripts. And if you're really diligent about it, you're going to write some remarks.
I was going to say, you know how you wrote it if you wrote any comments. Then you have a clue 6 months later. Yeah.
Right. But for somebody else to come pick it up and take it apart, it's like, oh my God, you might as well just scrap it all together, use it for influence and idea, but you might have to write your own. And that's kind of really what it was, where scripting and automation and all of that was kind of a scary space. You had to be a programmer first and a network engineer later, or be that expert that everybody was looking for, right? Somebody who had the best of both worlds. So because of that, I think automation was not really at the forefront of everybody's mind. But with that said, with my journey with IFTTT, I was, you know, just kind of exploring in the last few years, there's got to be a tool, there's got to be something. And everybody was kind of jumping on that bandwagon of network automation with all of the different flavors of tools that are around. So the journey for Rush kind of started with us exploring and finding out what's out there and what we wanted to do loosely. And at I think Cisco Live 2022, I think, not last one, but the one before in Vegas, we ran into a potential, and they seemed very interesting in what they offered, what they were able to deliver with automation. And I think apart from their automation piece, what interested me was the orchestration piece. So there was a lot of competitors. There's a lot of product out there that can deliver automation to some degree, but I really like the ability to tie in several systems together. And that's kind of what they offered.
So what were you trying to get done? What was your use case? We're trying to automate X. Was it things like turning up ports or throwing a security profile out there? What kind of things were you trying to do?
If you were to ask my engineers, I think they've got a list of like 50 things they want to accomplish. And I think that list grows daily. We can do this, we can do this. But truth be told, for us, one of the biggest challenges, there were a couple, but some of the biggest challenges that I was trying to solve is the mundane, the operational stuff that everybody just goes, yeah, I'll get to it. Or stuff that is impacting patient care that we, you know, just it's trivial, but somebody needs to do it. So for us, a lot of it was around IP reservations. And there's a whole lot of devices really within that IP reservation space that we wanted to solve for. But the one that we wanted to target first with IP reservations was printers. And I'll kind of go into why that's really important. Because again, it's such a trivial device. And to think that printers are an integral part of healthcare operations and care delivery, it's impressive. So it all starts with you kind of walking in through the door with whether it's the ED, whether it's OR, or whether it's really just kind of getting to your doctor. You are in some capacity interfacing with a printer. I know they've got electronic HIPAA signatures and whatnot now, but I mean, you still have to get a band if you're coming into the hospital. So if a printer breaks today, if a printer stops and starts malfunctioning, you've got a team that is out there to repair the printers, but given the nature of healthcare and the unique data that we are responsible for, we've got some stringent controls and strict controls around how we put these devices onto our network. And because of that, you would think that, you know, just a printer's DHCP, plug it in, it picks up an IP. But again, because of those controls, we make sure that they get appropriate networks, they have appropriate workflows within the our EMR. So it touches a lot of hands. And remember, this printer's broken, you can't use it. So now the clinical staff have to borrow from another department, they have to get a spare, or they have to go to an area that's a little further away, again, hampering their workflow. So again, slowing down or impacting delivery of care to some capacity. And now you've got individuals and technicians that are waiting for somebody else to do this and help them with the IP reservation or changing a name out or integrating it into some EMR workflow. And all of that, I mean, it could take a couple of hours and engineers are busy with other projects. And if they have to break away from that to take care of this, now that project sees a little bit of a slowdown and we have to reschedule, and it impacts everything for something so trivial. So that was one that we really wanted to solve for. And in addition to that, again, is what you'd called out earlier, right? So port reservations is another big one. We've got the port's gone bad, we're moving it to another port, or hey, we had to move an emergency device here and we're trying to activate it. So we wanted to solve for that. How can we incorporate some level of self-service for our field engineers and field technicians so that way they're not having to rely on us? During normal business hours, it's fine, but then you also have to start thinking about quality of life for the engineers, because now they're having to wake up at 2 a.m. because a printer broke. And the first one, they're happy to do it because they support the mission, they support the cause. The second one, they're willing to do it. And then after that, it becomes a little turbulent, right?
Turbulent. Yeah.
Right. Oh. Nicely put, right? But that's what it is. You have to start balancing that quality of life with patient care. And apart from patient care, there's a patient safety aspect of it as well. There's some regulations that we have to comply to. There's some component of that that we have to make sure that we have a particular amount of device types, right, within a particular space. So to meet those and to make sure we meet those with consistency, we have a staff that has to constantly be available, a staff that's constantly having to drop project work for operations work. So those are two challenges that we're trying to solve. And then again, the last one is really around the crisis that I think everybody in healthcare is facing today. That is the uptick of cyber threats and cyber attacks on healthcare systems. So within that, you know, we've got our systems, we've got our tools that are actively monitoring, we've got our teams that are actively doing what they need to do as far as investigations. And after those investigations, we want to take action on whatever the end result is. And we want to do so with a sense of urgency. So today, it goes through a couple different hands, a couple different emails, and hey, this is 2:30 a.m. and somebody has to do this with urgency, again, paging somebody out to get something taken care of.
Just for clarity here, you're automating incident response, that sounds like?
That's the intent. We're trying to intend on, so say, for example, a malicious actor has been identified, and how do you get that malicious actor from identification to blocking them, right, to some sort of mitigation strategy? So we're trying to go from that to ultimately blocking the user. I mean, I'm sure there's ways of doing it, right, with expanded access for individuals and all of that, but that brings its own risk. So we're trying to minimize that risk. And I think more importantly is with our network security or cyber hats on, right, we have to start thinking about documentation. We have to start thinking about change control. So we're trying to incorporate all of that with change control, from identification to putting in a request to getting the right approvals to ultimately blocking the end user. And that's why I was saying, like, it's not just an automation piece, right? It's an orchestration, because you've got to touch at a minimum 3 or 4 different tools, including ServiceNow, that's our ticketing system. But how do you incorporate all of those things, and how do you do so effectively without having developers from ServiceNow, without having coders represented within all of these different technology stacks? That's kind of what we're trying to accomplish with our automation journey.
No, I like the fact that you have this step process, right? Like, you know, eventually this is where you want to go. You want to have incident response, and there are several steps involved. But at the same time, that's not your first step. I mean, the first step is definitely something, you know, evaluating different tools, and you take baby steps toward, you know, just automating a piece of it. And you don't really get into it until you, either for a printer, like you mentioned, or like a port, you know, automating IP reservation,
automating, you know, assigning a point to a VLAN. Once you get those, it's so hard to go from zero to one. And then, you know, not to mention it's not hard from one to two, but zero to one to me is, you know, really difficult. And you mentioned the orchestration tool. So how did the journey evolve along the way? Let's take you back into that beginning on your evaluation. You mentioned you met, you know, Itential at Cisco Live. And at that time, what were your different considerations? What tool have you already experimented with? Or, you know, like that age-old question of buy versus build. So take us through that journey.
I want to be cognizant and not knock any tools for other folks, right? I think there's the right tool for everyone.
Except Pro. we established that. No Pro.
Yeah. Well, Pearl had its time, and I think you got to evolve, right?
Yeah.
For the record, I met Larry Wall, and I sat into like a language summit where Larry and Guido van Rossum, like they both sit on the stage and discuss back and forth on the pros and cons of their design principles and all of that. So like you said, no knock on Pearl, and it has its use cases, but I at least love Python, and it sounds like you guys as well. But sorry to derail. I mean, I was asked a lot of that question, Pro versus Python. So I just had to put that in.
Yeah. And honestly, again, like I think you're pretty big in the Python space. I've seen some of your other work. But again, I mean, everything has its place. And for us, right, we did evaluate a couple other tools, I think. But the biggest challenge for some of these tools within the automation space, right, were, hey, we do automation and we do it really well, but it's only centered around this technology stack, which is network security, and we do a lot of the firewall stuff. Hey, we do automation and we do all of these mapping of your environment, and you can make one-click resolutions and all of that from, you know, identifying a bad router, a bad cable, and fixing it, and you can click and go. But we're really focused within the network infrastructure. So a lot of it with all of these different tools was specific to a particular technology stack. And we were looking for something that was more holistic because really, I mean, the network is really the start of our automation journey, but certainly not the end. We're trying to branch out. We're trying to build it here, showcase the tool and its effectiveness on just operational maturity, and then start branching out to other teams within IT infrastructure, from server to telephony and so on.
Well, okay, you said showcase. So is part of the showcasing for management? In other words, are you looking for buy-in from management before they're going to get totally behind this thing? Or is management already on board with the network automation you're trying to do?
This is one thing that I'm going to really say. I think for Rush's leadership, especially the ones that I interact with often, they're very supportive of this automation journey because most of them have kind of been in that engineering space and have grown out of it. And they see some of the same challenges that we see on a regular basis. So they're definitely on board. But the showcasing is really kind of where we had to see a demo as well, right? For us, our tool of choice was Itential. And Itential put on a good show for us at Cisco Live. They talked to us about what the tool can do, handed out a couple koozies just to make sure that we were entertained. But more importantly, they put a good show out there, and almost to the point where when we saw it, it was like, that's it? Really? This is how simple it is? So we took it back. We took a little breather when we got back, and we requested a demo. And it really, truly, the engineers that went and some of them that participated in the proof of value, they really thought that there's got to be a catch. There's got to be a, but wait, there's more kind of moment, right? And here's the licensing and whatnot, or here's what you need to do. But they thought it was fantastic. So it was a little bit of a shock to everybody, including myself and my team. So when we talk about this tool, I really think it needs to be showcased because of the simplicity around it. When you talk about automation, network automation, infrastructure automation, or automation in general, right? You're thinking about the long scripts. You're thinking about the Perl scripts. You're thinking about getting modules in Python or even Ansible and writing these playbooks. And there has to be an engineer dedicated to this. And there's no way I'd be able to jump in and start incorporating this into my workflow. So what we're trying to do is showcase that that's a mindset of yesterday. There are tools out there that are taking that coding layer and abstracting it from that coding requirement to, hey, now you can take these and build building blocks and put recipes together, build modules in. So that's where I'm talking about showcasing.
Yeah, okay. You're making an if this, then that, or a Zapier style comparison where Itential gives you more of that feeling. Is that where you're headed with this?
Yes, that's where I'm heading. And then trying to get my peers, trying to get some of that out and just kind of spread the message, right? Hey, like automation doesn't have to be scary. You don't have to do it all at once. You can build a small module, and that's kind of what we're going. We're going with a more modular approach, right? Hey, here's how we're going to do a name reservation. Here's how we're going to do an IP reservation. Here's how we're going to do a port turnup. Now, take all of these and start putting all three of these into a deliverable workflow. And that is kind of your secret sauce for turning up a new device. Or, hey, we were building a workflow to automate F5 pool management. Now take that with a workflow for a VM turnup. So again, the end state is really to take infrastructure and start building it at a much faster rate than we are today. But again, it's got to start in small building blocks. So we're starting small, showcasing the tool, showcasing delivery, and trying to mature our automation journey from there.
And so was that the sign-off you got from management then? They saw the showcase and were like, thumbs up? Or were they on board before?
My direct leadership, they saw that, hey, we're going to try to go towards this grandiose approach, right? We're going to start small, put these building blocks together, and now we're going to expand into this infrastructure automation. So we're on the, hey, this is good. This sounds great. Now let's see it in action. And the reason why I chose to break it down is we all like to see results early, right? Instead of trying to build our entire software suite and deliver, let's start breaking down important features and start putting these smaller features in so we can get early adopters and we can get confirmation. We can get people to go, oh, this looks great, but what about this? And again, like some of these workflows, these are internally driven by the network team, but eventually we're going to get to a place where it's like, hey, wait a second. I understand what you're trying to do, but we can layer this level of service on top of what you already have. So that's the approach. So from a senior leadership perspective, they're excited because again, they're nerds, much like you and I, and they want to see some of this automation as well, right? But I think it comes down to, for them, I think the big wins were really quicker turnaround, right? And I think we talked about, or at least the term is really more applicable and apt for software delivery. But in our case, I don't know what it is, but the go-to market, right? How quickly can we get a product, a feature, a request, right? Whether it's through Change or MACD, right? How can we get that completed? I think automation is really our next step to get that. So instead of a printer being replaced in 3 days, 4 days time, and everybody kind of suffering through it, or everybody dropping everything that we're doing and having to immediately solve this because it impacts patient safety, we can put a lot of that onto an automation platform and have something done in a couple hours or less. Same thing around, again, the big cyber scare, right? Instead of waking everybody up at 3 a.m. to block one IP address, how do we do this, incorporate it into change management, have the right documentation, have the right approvals in place? And it just happens, right? It takes a SOC to go, this needs to happen. And they have a certain level of, maybe they can approve like a single IP block versus entire CIDRs. So there's some guardrails that we have to put in place, but that's the intent. So that way a lot of it is self-service, faster go-to-market. And then that has a trickle-down effect, right? You have quality of life changes for your engineering team. You're not working 40 hours and then having to work another 40 through on call.
Yes.
So just more time doing some of the more exciting new tech stuff, right? And I think automation is that new tech, but it does enable other individuals and contributors to do some of the more fun stuff too.
The biggest surprise to me when we talked before was the healthcare network system has its unique challenges. So I want to double click on that a little bit. Typically, when you think of a complex system, a large scale system, you always go build it yourself. That's been my experience previously that, you know, because it's so complex, there's nothing off the shelf that could help me solve my problem. And I would imagine that the healthcare network system is really complex, interdependent. There's so many systems involved where networking is an important part, but it's only a part of it. So what was surprising to me when we were discussing this was facing the unique challenges, you still were able to use iTential to solve those problems. And so I just want to double click on that. You know, perhaps you could shed some lights in telling us some of those answers. I mean, you mentioned some of it as interoperability with other systems, scalability, or your modularized, right? So what are some of the components that iTential helps you facing unique challenges within the healthcare system, but at the same time, make it easy to do modularize and so on. Now, if you have any examples or, you know, maybe just an end-to-end process that you've done, you know, such as port turnup, that'd be great.
Yeah, I think with that, we're still working with, again, we're very early in our journey, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think we've completed 2 or 3 workflows. The F5 one is kind of a big one. And how do we load balance? Like, so we have a critical application, our EMR, and our EMR goes through these quarterly updates and so on, right? And in that, they have a 4-hour window that they go through some change management, and we have to do some CNAME manipulation. We have to do some work within the F5 pool space. So my team again, has to participate in this every so often. And that was kind of a big one where our component is so little in this change, but we're still an integral part of it. So the team is trying to operationalize through automation that piece, right? There's a change management request put in place. We tie ourselves to a simple task on that, and my engineers will be available from an on-call perspective, but it allows a little bit of that self-service for our EMR team to be able to support and do code upgrades and kind of fail systems over and do DR exercises. So that's certainly a use case that we put in play today. Other than that, I think a lot of it is us just trying to build out the fundamentals, right? Because we don't have any foundational automation. So we're trying to take a look at how can our team put something in place today and then just start stacking some stuff on top of that. The intent is really to then start partnering with the server team. Our typical build cycle for an application request can be up to 4 to 6 weeks, right? From design to different teams and integrating and start putting stuff together and just based on workload. So now if we can take on that, somebody is able to go into a ServiceNow form and we're able to populate that we need this many vCPUs, we need X amount of memory and we need X amount of storage. And as long as it's architecturally sound, the orchestration and the automation can kind of go ahead and build that. But not just that, it's able to now in turn go, okay, this VM is going to get spun up here and that needs a port configured within the network fabric on this switch, or we need to tag it for this particular VLAN and we need to create this DNS record and we need to start spinning up F5 pools and we need to, again, like it starts evolving and it starts evolving very rapidly. But again, those building blocks on F5 pools and F5 pool creation and integration and moving those around, the DNS component of it, the port activation component of it. So what we're trying to do is build the foundation building blocks. And then again, I think in the next 6 to 12 months, we're going to start seeing them called upon as we start building these larger workflows and incorporating them into ServiceNow. I strongly think that we need to get these foundational things done first. Yeah. And then we're going to start talking about how do we start calling them build larger workflows.
Oh, you're seeing how the system comes together. And it's funny you're bringing up F5 as someone who's built several hundred virtual IPs and pool members and health checks and so on by hand to be able to automate all that stuff and make them self-service. Like, it's been a while since I put my hands on an F5, been a bunch of years. There were no tools back when I was working on F5s, but the process is much the same. And that's the most natural thing in the world. And as you say, it's a building block of what was a larger thing that needed to be done, some larger process. Okay, got to stand up this VIP and these pool members for this QA test that's happening. Okay, well, now we got to do the same thing for user acceptance testing. Oh, now we're ready to go to prod and do the same thing again. And there were ports that were being reserved and there were new machines that were maybe going up to support this app and that required some kind of physical switch port to be reserved and so on and so on. There were all these dependencies, plus the documentation on the back end, tying it all into the systems and making it all go. And you don't build all of it at once. You start with little chunks at a time, and then you assemble the whole system together. That sounds like the road you're on. And yeah, once you get there, you're going to be very happy indeed.
You know what the common theme is in all the steps that you describe, Ethan, is manual, right? Like an interdependency. Yeah. And all of those steps, when you're manual, you introduce the possibility of error. And when it's 3 a.m. in the morning, because that's where we get the maintenance windows in. And so I think back to what Uzair was saying is that, you know, you compartmentalize, you modularize, and then you start taking pieces on, maybe we could just automate this piece that decreases our human error potential, and then taking care of the dependencies, right? Like, it's hard to remember things at 3 a.m. in the morning. And I don't know if you can see the scar on my face right here, but I've caused several big outages for my previous employers. Sorry about that. Just by load balancers. So, I mean, I could totally identify with what you were saying, Uzair, is just these interdependencies and you getting from 0 to 1, laying down the foundation in to make it easy to do so, right? So that you have a service catalog where you can point and click.
Yeah, and it's funny that you say that, right? Like, I feel like every engineer can relate to it. Our very first outage and the second and the third, right? Due to something so fundamentally silly, like, oh my God, I cannot believe I had that typo. I cannot believe I did that, right? Like, it's never been like, I didn't know that was the impact. Like, immediately when you do it, you know why it did what it did.
Yeah.
Yep.
If you were to be able to take that out of there, have you really proof out your script, proof out your process, and do so with consistency and leave some other tool, some other automation engine behind entering data into your script, I think you've eliminated the human error. Because softwares, they have bugs, but they're far and few, but it's predictable. Humans are not, right? You could have had a bad day. I was dealing with some sinus issues, and I feel like in the last few days I've been barely together and able to put a coherent thought. So like, again, like that's just me, but there's a team of 15 that report up, right? Each one could be unique and they could have different life circumstances that are happening. And it's easy to make that error. And I think that's where if you remove that error, it's phenomenal.
I think you're giving us too much credit.
I don't even have to have a lot of complicated things going on in my life to make a mistake. I could just be looking at my terminal window, have 16 tabs going, and happen to have picked the wrong one when I pasted that IP address into the interface. Whoops. Sorry, production. That meant to go in the lab. My bad.
We're following drove BGP routes for the management network before, Ethan. There are companies out there that specialize in recovering from that.
No router OSPF. Oh, whoops, that was a backbone router in prod. My bad. Yeah, these things happen. Okay, provocative question for you, Zare. As you look ahead here, do you see a change in headcount? That is, when you get this system up and running, you got your service catalog going, you got a lot of workflows that have automated the systems. Do you're like, we're not going to need as many people or not?
It's interesting that you asked that because I've been kind of pondering on that myself for some time, but really, no, I don't think so. I think with automation, there's a lot of positive changes that are coming in. One, again, quality of life is a big one. Right? To be able to have that time back doing the mundane, it's invaluable. And then again, not being woken up at 3 a.m. is another big win. There's a quality of life aspect of it. And then there's a customer satisfaction aspect of it. I mean, we all came from an environment where we're doing 56K and then dial up and then kind of slowly working our way up. Right now, a gig is at minimum that we want. I don't think we can go back to something lower. Just because we've added a tool to turn around things faster, to deliver things faster, to solve some of those operational challenges, I don't think we're going to take headcount away. I think we'll be able to evolve and develop our technology stack faster. We're going to go from, hey, focusing on that operational mundane stuff to solving complex challenges, because automation will help you do the trivial. And even in some cases, your complex stuff, right? But engineers need to engineer. Architects need to architect and design and solve complex challenges, which I don't think we're at, you know, in any capacity to solve with automation today, at least not in the landscape that we're at today, especially from a headcount perspective, right? If there's any fear of that, I think you also have to start thinking about the technology stacks that we support today. So Itential solves some of our challenges for port configuration on the Catalyst platform today in a particular way, and Juniper in a particular way on this particular code. But we've all been through this, right? ASAs have done this. Cisco's done this. They're notorious for platform changes, the layout, the code, the language, and all of that stuff changes. Now you got to evolve your workflows, right? So that's kind of why I think you're going to start seeing a more mature way of service delivery, right? You're not solving the operational challenges that you're solving today. You're solving the maturity of the changes within your tech stack. So you're upgrading code on a Juniper platform. Well, what's changed? Underlying configuration changes? How do I need to change my automation workflows to accommodate that? So I think they're going to become more automation engineers more so than just true network engineers.
Yeah, it's not just the platforms that'll change. It's also going to be your internal processes will change. You'll have new regulations that come down and that drive some process change internally. Something like that'll hit you.
I think that circles back to what you were saying before, Wizard, was the fact that you're not locked into a particular platform. Like, I'm paraphrasing what you said before, was here's a walled garden, come live in the walled garden, everything would be great, but as long as you stay within the boundaries. But now that you have a tool that lets you go outside of the boundaries, you offload the mundane tasks, like what's changed in the API structure, what's changed in the query parameters. Like, you don't need to do all of that. You offload some of that to your tool of choice. At the same time, then you're focusing on the architect. You're focusing on the higher level of the operations. Is that correct? Is that what you're talking about?
Right on point. And again, I think it's back down to the day-to-day operations versus solving challenges. I think that's really where the shift is going to be. And I can't imagine anybody wanting to say, hey, I want to put in 100 DNS reservations today because that's what excites me. I'm sure there's somebody out there and more power to them. But I think more than not, somebody would want to go, I kind of want to see what that new code's doing and how do we incorporate that into our workflows, or what changed in the new code that we have to adjust our workflows around.
You also mentioned this, that they're almost becoming an automation engineer. So if you were to, you know, look back on, you know, maybe just 2 years ago or maybe even 6 months ago, that knowing what you know now, what would your recommendations be for younger self or younger engineers? Let's just say, you know, I come into your team and say, hey, Wuzhi, I want to be the superstar. What kind of skill sets do I need to possess? Or what kind of learning path recommendation would you give me?
I think some form of code or understanding code, right, I think would be such an invaluable skill. It could even be Perl. But just understanding what you can do with code, what are all of the functions and what's possible, right? I think that would be a great skill to have. And you have to start thinking about at least modularity, right? Like, how can I solve this challenge and compartmentalize it or break it down into small little chunks? Because we don't have to solve all of the infrastructure problems in one day. We're working on this ourselves, right? Where we're going, hey, I get where we want to go, but let's think about what it takes to get there. So I think I would say problem solving is super critical, but understanding automation and some form of language would be helpful, but not necessarily mandatory. And I think this is where I will give a little plug to Itential, in that they were focused when we were having our conversation in our actual cutover and go live, right? Or transitioning to a cutover to production. They were big on like, hey, we'll get there. With the platform, we'll stand it up. The automation scripts will build it. We'll do all of those things. But let's start teaching you to start thinking like a developer and understanding you have to have a test dev environment. You have to have a QA process. You have to have a workflow, right? And I think most of us are happy to get behind a keyboard, but far and few are like, okay, fine, I'll put a Visio together and I'll start putting the workflow in place. And how does data flow from A to Z? There's not many of us that want to do that. But I think most of us are like, I'll jump behind a keyboard, I'll do some show configs, and I'll start configuring routers right away or building out scripts. So I think that's an important skill to have, to where kind of go back a little bit and draw it out first. What are you trying to do? Get that intent down, and then have that, how do you orchestrate this? What components of this can be automated, right? If it's a thing that you're doing once a year and you're going to spend n number of hours trying to put that together, is there really any value? Because I mean, it might change 3 or 4 times before you execute on that again. So let's start talking about what should we automate before we even get to how to automate. I think that's going to be a skill that's going to be invaluable when you kind of come into the next 12 months, 18 months for some of these engineers that are going to be jumping on.
So are you hiring? No, I'm just kidding.
Believe it or not, Rush is growing at a very rapid rate. So yeah, we're going to have some room on the team in the coming months. So if you're looking.
That's awesome. So looking forward, I understand just from our conversation, you've laid down the foundational pieces, you have the high level orchestration down, and I believe, you know, you have these runners that are doing the automation work. So you have the fundamentals down. So looking forward, what are some of your future plans? What's the next step for you and your team?
Some of the next step is now we're going to start taking this, again, do an internal roadshow, not necessarily around Itential, but more a, hey, here's some of the things that we've got today. Right. Here's where we can start layering in some of your workflows. You got a little bit of time and we can help bridge that gap. We'll show you how to use a tool. We'll show you how to operate it. We'll show you, heck, we'll even dedicate some time to kind of build it in with you. And again, it's more really to benefit my team a little bit, but also to benefit the institution, my team, in the sense that we won't have to be part of this manual effort, but more so to help out. And again, our focus has always been to deliver excellent care and to have a better patient outcomes and better patient experiences, right? And I think the best way to do that is to speed up, but do so with a level of efficiency and surety that we're doing it in the correct way, the processes that we have in place. So we're going to start incorporating this workflow with some of our partners on the server side. Once we have the infrastructure kind of done correctly, where we can go, hey, look, we can turn up an application pretty quickly, let's start incorporating some of the application workflows. And I think that's more of a future state conversation. But for us, I think the near-term future, if there is such a thing, near-term future, it's more of getting the infrastructure component automated. And then we'll start talking about all these other things. But one thing that I will say, I think, is at least out of this tool and the exercise that the team's doing, is that we're coming to realize that, I mean, we had documentation, we had a lot of that, but we didn't have it incorporated into our ticketing system, our change management system, right? So with a lot of these workflows, we're incorporating that into the ticketing system. We're incorporating, ServiceNow is basically like, how do we take A and how do we take Z and how do we make sure that both are documented as a deliverable item in ServiceNow? The last thing around this that I will say is, from a ServiceNow perspective, right, I think that was a bit of a scary space for us, because that tool in itself is huge. And I think it requires developers and a development team in itself. But one thing that I think, I'm not sure if other vendors are doing this, but one thing that I will say is that Attential, we're able to kind of take that service now layer, right? That our interaction with our user community and abstract that a little bit and not necessarily require a developer. So we're able to create almost a front layer to ServiceNow that ServiceNow is offering without having to have a developer on the team to push a lot of this work towards ServiceNow. I mean, ultimately, you do want to get to that place that you have ServiceNow workflows, but if you want to launch and you want to launch quick and early, it's easy for you to develop a, like, we need you to enter a MAC address, and that MAC address gets entered in a portal page that's kind of presented by Attential, and you can put some guardrails around it. That, I think, is phenomenal, right? If you want to say, hey, like, I'm replacing a printer. Well, we kind of have a list of what are the MAC addresses of, you know, an HP printer or a Zebra printer, right? So we can put some guardrails on, like, if your MAC address doesn't start with this prefix, you probably got the wrong MAC address. I think that itself is kind of cool that we don't necessarily have to put in a ticket and then fall into the next sprint to put this control in place. The team's able to develop this rapidly and internally. And then eventually the goal is that we can incorporate that in through ServiceNow natively, but we have the flexibility of doing it without it. I think that's phenomenal for anybody that's trying to jump in and get started like tomorrow.
Yeah, this time to market that you mentioned over and over again, right? Like that's really the key here is you shorten up your development cycle because you're, you know, modularized and you get the right tools in place. And now that you're able to focus on the higher stuff, such as, you know, getting more management buy-ins, doing the roadshows, putting an abstraction interface to other tools like your ServiceNows or your user interface. I mean, a lot of things that I saw as a consistent thing is that once you get this done is, you know, the monitoring, the network observability, you feed it in and that whole becomes a whole cycle. So I think that's really phenomenal that you're taking this first step, and thank you for sharing that experience with us. Hey, Uzir, I had a great time talking to you today. Thank you so much for sharing your story. Where can people find you on social or if they want to learn more about your automation journey?
It was a pleasure. I mean, it was a really interesting conversation. I'm sure, you know, we can go on for days talking about automation. If you're looking to reach out, I'm on LinkedIn and I'm at Rush today. And again, hint, hint, if you're looking for work, Rush is a really exciting place. We're doing a lot of cool things and we've got a fantastic mission and a great team supporting. So if you want to be part of that journey, reach out.
Awesome. Thanks again. Thank you for listening to this episode of Network Automation Nerds. Do you have any feedbacks for Network Automation, our guest today, or our sponsor, or this episode? Send us some follow-ups at packetpushers.net/FU, where FU stands for follow-up. Of course, we want to hear from you. Check out our website at packetpushers.net to find other network engineering-focused podcasts, blogs, YouTube videos, and so much more. You can find podcasts such as Network Break for weekly news, Heavy Networking for deep dives, Packet Protector for security, and much more. We thank our sponsor, Attential, for making this episode possible for our listeners, and Uzair for taking the time today. Last but not least, remember that too much network automation will never be enough.